Okay. Got it.
Okay.
It is 5:01, and the Pacific City Joint Water Sanitary Authority Board of Directors business meeting is now in order for February 13th, 2024, at the Kiawanda Community Center, Faye Jensen Room, and also virtually on Microsoft Teams. Call to order, Director Carlton.
Here.
Director Strotska.
Here.
Director Price.
Here.
Director Gogas is absent, and I am the chair, Tom Donahue. So I'm going to read the rules of conduct as per normal. All cell phones, pagers, and other mobile communication devices must be turned off or silenced for the duration of the meeting. All persons in attendance will remain quiet during the course of the meeting unless called upon to comment. They will refrain from any behavior that disturbs, disrupts, or otherwise impedes the orderly conduct of the meeting, to include shouting, booing, hissing, etc. They will also refrain from creating, provoking, or participating in any type of disturbance involving unwelcome physical contact. You will be asked to leave the room to conduct side discussions. Let's see here. Any guest identifications? It appears we have just, for the record, Jed Peffinger is here, as well as Rochelle DeLow from office staff. And so item five is the minutes for the January 9th, 2024 business meeting. Are there any corrections, deletions, or additions?
I have one, Tom. In the guest comments and questions section, when we were talking to the guests about responsibilities for the road, mention of it being a local access road, and the minutes reflect that I said that the county has jurisdiction over the road, but the road's owned by the state of Oregon. I don't think I said that, because that would have been incorrect.
I don't think you said that either.
Yeah.
I hadn't
Somebody
picked up on
did,
it here.
But I don't remember who it was.
Yeah, I don't think we would have said that. I think the ownership is kind of unknown.
It's largely unknown.
But possibly the individual homeowners might own some.
They might, but for the purpose of the minutes, I don't think you said that.
I don't think I did. If I did, it was taken out of context. So I just wanted to make
sure. You mentioned it was on a list of state-designated local access roads.
That's county designation.
Yeah, that's county that designates that.
Local access roads are designated
by
the county.
Yeah, but I remember, but whoever was talking about it at the last meeting referred to it as a state listing.
Well, if I misspoke, I guess the record should stand. I know that's not what you're saying. It came from somewhere.
Came from somewhere. I think you changed the record. I'm fine with that.
Yeah, I know that to not be true, so it seems odd.
For changing the minutes, we could end that sentence that has jurisdiction over it, period.
I think that would probably be best. Yeah, since we don't know exactly the context. We could re-listen to it, but if I said that, it was a slip.
Well, if it was said, I don't think you said it.
It seems like an odd thing for me to say. But anyway, that's the only thing that I noticed.
Okay, so what shall we do then? Shall we correct it?
Well, we'll just approve the minutes as amended.
As amended, okay. Any other omissions or corrections? Hearing none, I would entertain a motion. Director Price?
I'll move that we approve the January 9th, 2024 business meeting minutes as amended.
Second.
We have a motion and a second to approve the minutes as amended. All those in favor signify by stating aye.
Aye.
Raise your hand. Aye. Any opposed? Motion carried. Item 6, financial report, accounts payable for January 15th and January 31st, 2024. Are there any comments? Hearing none, I would entertain a motion.
I move that the financial report for January 15th and January 31st be approved as presented.
I'll second.
We have a motion and a second to approve the accounts payable for January 15th and the 31st, 2024. All those in favor signify by stating aye. Raise your hand.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed? Motion carried. Under the general ledger, item 6B, financial year 23-24, are there any comments or anything else? Hearing none, we'll move on. Then item number 7, manager's report. John, what he got for us?
Thank you, Tom. Couple of notes here. Master plan meeting is a go. Ready or not, it is a go. Working on the presentation and stuff now, and we should be ready to roll with the meeting. I did move the starting time back to 5:30. I found out that there was a class ahead of us, and this is a meeting I want to have plenty of setup time for. So the meeting will run from 5:30 to 7:30. I don't know if you all have seen the advertisement, not only in the Headlight Herald, but in the PC Sun as well. When I contacted the PC Sun about an advertisement for the meeting, Tim Hirsch was interested in doing a story about it, kind of a primer for the meeting. I read it. I was, kind of a little mixed about it at first because, I didn't want to give too much information and have people say, oh, well, now I don't have to come to the meeting, right? So I think that it was, I think that this will help to advertise the meeting and, kind of set the tone for it with anybody who reads that article. And if it, if it triggers people from, to attend, I think that's a great thing. So, anyway, just a confirmation about that. Did want to mention Rupel Avenue briefly. They're doing work down there this week. That's a good thing. We'll see how far they get. Other than that, not much to report. I've been sharing, what I think is important information with the board throughout. So that's about all I have to say on that.
Have they done any paving?
They have. Earlier this last month, they did get some paving done. It was they worked on the trench cuts for the service lines, and they did get 6 or 7 of those done, but then I didn't see them again down there until this week. So I not a lot of progress since the last meeting, but any progress is good progress. And as I say, it's they seem to be have a lot of equipment and a lot of people down there when I drove by there today. So we'll see how well they do.
And what's the plan for getting the county to sign off, essentially, the roads department, on whether or not they've adequately brought it up to standards?
Well, we know that there's still a lot of work to do before they'll give that approval. Once we feel like that approval is ready, and, it'll be probably a joint decision between the contractor and me, we're the permit holder. So we're the ones that have to satisfy the requirement. And I will, I'm sure the contractor will let me know when they feel they've reached full completion. And then I will go down there and take a good look at things and see if I agree. If I don't agree, then I'm going to ask the contractor to come back because I'm pretty familiar with what the county wants to see there, and anything that falls short of that, I'll have to point that out, or the county will do it for us.
Excuse me for interrupting.
Sure.
I'd like to point out that Director Gogas arrived at 5:10, 2 minutes ago.
Hi, Cameron.
Thank you. Apologies for being tardy. Sorry. Hi, everybody.
Please go ahead.
John.
Yes.
John, I assume that you and Tom are sitting next to each other, but I can't hear any of the other board members.
My audio is turned off.
Which is great, but I'm assuming that you're sitting right next to John.
Yes.
I can't hear anything Sean says except the answers that John is giving. I'm assuming I know what the question was.
Oh, well, I wonder why that is.
Do you have your audio off on your computer?
Mine, I don't have anything on my computer.
Yeah, I think the idea was is hopefully they could hear us from here.
Yeah,
I can scoop down a little bit, but I don't know
these
what
are,
else.
Well,
I,
these are just
that's
for
just recording. So.
Yeah. Anne, would you say something as a test?
I'm testing the volume for Rochelle.
Thanks, I can hear you.
Okay.
So we'll be sure and speak up.
Okay, all right.
Can we hear John?
Well, I think we can if he's a little extra loud, but...
Well, loud's not hard for me. Is that better, Michelle?
I can hear John, thank you.
Okay, great. All right, well, I think we're okay. Hey guys, how are you?
Hi.
Welcome.
Hi. Welcome.
We're about halfway through the agenda here, guys. So does everybody know Bill Howard?
I've seen you for a long time.
His son Kyle. Yeah. Welcome, you guys. Glad you can make it. So going on with the manager's report. We did have a recordable safety incident that occurred in January. Those are always something that I'm disappointed to report about. Had a employee running a handheld grinder, and the grinding wheel disintegrated on him while he was using it. And although he was wearing safety glasses, got a couple of specs in one of his eyes. And he was sent to the eye doctor as a precaution. No significant injury. I think there was a little scratch over here off to the side, but we don't play around with stuff like that.
Was there a guard on the grinder?
This would have been a hand grinder. I'm sure it had one of those little built-in guards, but when the wheel breaks apart,
did it have a guard on it?
Oh, I'm sure it did. Yes, I haven't seen it, but I'm sure it did. This was not a benchtop grinder. It was a hand grinder, and I have not inspected the grinder because I know the wheel to be the problem in this case. And I will say that we have implemented a policy where we inspect the grinding wheels and the cutters well before they're used, just in case there's any visible cracks or anything. I don't know if that was the case in this situation or not, but we've also implemented a policy that any grinding activity, whether it's with a handheld grinder or whether a benchtop grinder, that's the type of job we obviously need some added protection for. So in addition to safety glasses, they're going to wear a face shield.
Perfect.
And so that is now safety policy at the authority, and happy to report that no serious injury, no serious harm done, but you always have to, anytime something like this happens, you always have to investigate, evaluate, and mitigate. And I think that the additional steps we put in will help to do that. So Wanted to also mention that we now have the new electrical panels we've been waiting for Beachy and Madrona. Those projects been checking into the permitting process. Luckily, these two locations are not in the floodway. They're not in the floodplain. So outside of just electrical permits, we don't need anything. The next two will be more of a challenge. Our Cindy Left Station is firmly within the floodway. So we'll have to jump through some more hoops on that. Those will be the Cindy and Rogers will be the next two lift stations we do. Now that we've got the panels, we've got the pumps, we are ready to schedule this work and get a couple of more of those done. And after we do these, there's only three more total. Cindy and Roger will do next. Woods will be a different animal, and we'll work on getting that scheduled for next year. There's no reason we can't get four of them done this year. So that'll only leave one left, and we should be in good shape.
Are we spending about the same money as far as repairing them? Are they pretty much the same maintenance that needs to be upgraded on them?
They are, and they all seem to be the same vintage, which means the electrical panels are all virtually identical. Pretty much the same maintenance on all of them. I will say Madrona is didn't used to be, but with the other upgrades we made, Madrona is the site where we get the most rags when we do get them.
That's up on top of PC Heights, right?
No, Madrona's over off of at the end of Shore Drive,
Okay.
Yeah. I think that's where Madrona is.
Is that where we have a lot of vacation rentals?
Oh, I'm sure there's a lot of them in that area.
Do you think we can get something out to maybe the vacation rental people to put a reminder or something in with their do's and don'ts in their books, their rental books?
Yeah, we can maybe work with some of the owners to share some information. I do know that property rentals have a tendency to get used.
Stuff that you wouldn't do at your house. Yeah,
well, that can happen, and that could play part of what's going on there at Madrona. But Madrona hadn't been one of our biggest problems. We've already taken care of Kiwanda lift station used to be a big problem for us in terms of rags and so forth, but we don't have that problem anymore. After we replace these here, I don't think we're going to have that problem. These pumps can handle a lot, and they're working very well for us. So that's really all I've got of the manager's report.
Thank you, John. Any other comments for John on the manager's report?
You guys already went over the BLM property update.
No, we're getting to that.
Okay.
Yeah. Next item is item 8, unfinished business, BLM property trail update. John, I saw the signs in our packet. Were those what was recommended by legal?
Well, to be honest with you, I didn't consult with legal. What I did was this sign language is what our insurance agent recommended, and when I noticed that Tillamook County was utilizing exactly the same sign language,
yeah,
I figured that was good enough for us, and just a way to save some money, and I still feel very confident that we have the language in place to protect us.
I would like to point out at the Small District Association, Oregon Association meeting that this particular item was brought up.
Sure it was.
And they stated that it was being litigated and hopefully fixed at this short session of Congress.
Now,
well, that'd be good.
Is there any way that we can, I mean, instead of closing off, I mean, have you gone through the trails to see where the trip hazards are or any possible
problems? As a matter of fact, I understand, John, would you update that?
Well, one other interesting unexpected development related to the trail at the BLM property is Amanda Graves here at KCC alerted me to a funding opportunity. There's apparently some excess or unused grant dollars that they would like to apply towards the maintenance of this trail. And as I said, it's rather ironic that as soon as the trail closes, we get some good trail maintenance done. But I do believe the trail will be open again relatively soon. And I believe this is an opportunity we need to take advantage of. I did see Josh Fenty, mm-hmm, with Rosenhose will be the contractor doing the work. He walked the trail. My intent was to go with him. I wasn't available on the day he was available to do it. But he walked the trail, took notes of things that in his mind needed some upkeep. And he has identified some, not only some general trail maintenance, but some maintenance to the bench and so forth up at the viewing area. His quote is for the work is about $4,500, which is about what those remaining grant dollars have to offer.
Well, did we notify out of the recreation management plan? Did we notify everybody that was a partner in that? Because I went back to my book that I had, and all the partners that were involved on this. Did we notify them?
Well, most of the partners have, some of them have disbanded or morphed into other organizations.
Well, what about the Pacific City Pathways? Is that still?
They're defunct. They dissolved several years
in
ago.
In county parks, they're probably, what, they're doing the same thing, shutting down?
County parks has absolutely done the same thing in a lot of places.
But can't we put something up as that basically you're at your own risk of...
That's the sign that was in the packet.
On that.
I mean, but instead of closing it down permanently...
We had a pretty fulsome discussion of this last month, and John has vetted all the details on it, consulting with the insurance people, and our decision at the time was to close it down because of
lack of
future...
future liability. Danger
of litigation and liability.
But I, when I read the minutes of the packet, there was nothing about this, and I had talked to Rochelle about that, about updating.
Wasn't it last month?
The thing, I mean, but there's nobody else. I just wonder, does this jeopardize our lease, our wells?
No, it definitely wouldn't jeopardize our wells. One agency I did notify about this, though, was our realty contact at BLM. And I informed him that we were making this decision at this time with the hopes that sometime soon it could be reopened.
So will that go back to what we agreed about back in 2009? Will we lose the 33 acres?
No.
Because we haven't been doing things.
Well, we have been. We put fences up around the wells, and that was part of the original agreement. They haven't made any comments to us. And going back to last month's meeting minutes, it was brought up under item C that Mr. Wesley explained what was going on with the trail in a recent court decision and what that means for the authority going forward. There was a motion made by Director Price for pending confirmation from our legal advisors that we close the trail accesses and common entry points to the public for the time being on the BLM property. Director Strotska seconded in the motion with Carrie with four ayes. So we did address it. you must have missed that.
So, Tom, so I walked the trail 2 weeks ago, I guess, after the signs were up with a group of people. We see the signs. We walked it anyway. People are going to continue to walk it. The sign says, do so at your own risk. And so people understand. They asked me about it. And so I explained things. But I think people are going to continue to walk it regardless of what the sign is. The sign is just there just for us. It's not going to stop people.
It's there to protect us. And I've noticed the same thing. You know, people have historically parked near our back entrance and walked in, and people are still parking and doing it.
And it's impossible to remove all of the risk, because every time it rains,
or the wind,
or the wind blows, roots are going to be exposed, branches are going to break. Yeah. So unless you have somebody there 24 hours a day, there's going to continue to be things, and that's the nature of the beast. But it's that way at Sitka Sedge. It's that way at Bob Straub. It's that way everywhere.
So can we put something in the Sun about the trails, just to let people know?
Oh, they wrote an article about it.
Okay.
Yeah.
Cool.
Yeah.
Hey, let's move on.
Thank you.
Yep. Item 9, new business. Resolution 2401, public contracting and purchasing. John, would you like to fill us in on that?
Yeah. The 2023 Oregon Revised Statutes have increased the contract price thresholds for what the ORS is define as small and intermediate procurements. I think most people on the board will remember that our existing resolution about that set those thresholds at $10,000 to $150,000. Those thresholds have been increased to $25,000 and $250,000. Our original resolution mirrored what the Oregon Revised Statute said at the time. Now that they've been increased, I assume we'll want to update these resolutions to reflect the new laws. So this is really just a housekeeping type of resolution. I will say that I did throw in something that I always thought was a glaring omission in our original one, was it talks about purchases from 0 to 10 and from 10 to 150, but there was no mention of anything higher than that. So I wanted to, just define something as large procurements. It's not defined this way in the ORSs, but I think for the purpose of our resolution, it does tell us, okay, well, we know what to do between 0 and 25,000 after, assuming we increase the price threshold. We know what to do between 0 and 25. We know what to do between 25 and 250,000, but what about more than that? And, the answer was always in the ORSs, but I like the fact that I brought that in, because I always felt like that was something missing out of the original resolution. Other than that, it's just housekeeping. By the way, I did get your comment, and it's a very good one, which is because we're really talking about 25,000 and one penny at that point.
Yeah, item 2.
Yeah.
2B, intermediate procurements, was missing the greater than sign in front of 25,000.
And you're absolutely right about that.
The small procurement is less than or equal to 25, so intermediate is greater than 25.
That's right.
And that little doohickey was missing. That's technical language.
Yep, so. I think that's a good catch for sure.
Didn't we have a res?
Yes.
We've been doing under the money at the mount on the money.
2021, we had, what was it, 2103?
2301.
Right. That was what we're updating.
The money amount.
Yeah. Correct. And actually, I don't think it was 2301. I do think it was like 2103, wasn't it?
2103.
I can reference it here.
Something told me that
was a resolution that we adopted back in 2021.
Yeah.
And it still covers the emergency.
All that stuff hasn't changed.
It just changed the money amount.
Yeah, it's just, and you know, and I, you know, this is something I hope the board will approve, not only because it's consistent with what the Oregon Revised Statutes say now, but because it's going to assist my efforts, Rochelle's efforts to procure goods and services for the authority without having to be without having to jump through the hoops of the three quotes and all that type of stuff, because that takes a lot of time, and it can really put the brakes on a project. And by increasing that from 10,000 to 25, before we have to get the three informal quotes, is even going to streamline things for us at the authority a great deal, just in terms of the administrative effort it takes to push these projects forward.
All right.
Change in state law, we want to be consistent. We want to operate consistently with state law. So I guess we have a choice not to do this, but it would be silly not to.
Well, I was just giving you all the reason in the world to approve.
Yeah, I'm prepared to make a motion all the questions have been addressed.
Go ahead on.
Anybody? No? Nobody else? Okay, I'll move that we approve Resolution 24-01 in the matter of adopting public contracting and purchasing policies and procedures, rescinds Resolution 2103.
I'll second.
We have a motion and a second to approve Resolution 2401, public contracting and purchasing, which rescinds Resolution 2103. All those in favor signify by stating aye.
Aye.
Aye. Aye.
Opposed? Motion carried unanimously. Item 9B, Resolutions 2402 and 2403. These are two resolutions that we've been working on for about 6-8 months, something like that. At this time, I'd like to thank Director Carlton and Authority Manager Wesley for their help, helping me put this together. And the first one, Resolution Number 2402, is in the matter of adopting amendment to PCJWSA Resolution 1703, Exhibit A, and creating a new investigative policy for a complaint against a PCJWSA employee or member of the board of directors. The purpose of this evening's meeting is to have the directors, the additional directors who didn't work on this, to go over it, make any suggestions for both of these. And if after we incorporate those suggestions into the current text, I'd like to bounce them off of our human resources consultant once more to see if we're kind of up to snuff on modern HR practices in regards to an investigative policy and the other harassment and other inappropriate behavior policy. So, Director Gogas, Price, Drevska, do you have any comments about either of these two new resolutions?
Yep.
Director Gogas.
There was a part, and I don't think I have that resolution.
In the packet, I'll note that they were...
Yes, thank you.
They were noted incorrectly.
There was a part about directors, and I think that in our policy and handbook, discipline of public officers, employees, and that refers to ORS 192.66 2B. That I think should be in a executive meeting of discussion of that.
What was that ORS?
That was 192.6602B.
It's my understanding. I will look that up.
Well, and then
but
it's also
under, it's my understanding that there's only two cases where we can have an executive session.
I have that right here.
And that is if we are dealing with employees and or if we are discussing with attorneys or legal counsel any legal pending litigation or possible litigation.
I have that right here, and that is under also executive sessions 192.66 executive sessions, and that would be also
66 what?
The same under 92.66 executive sessions, and also under 192.610 to 192.690. It gives every one of the reasons of why you can have an executive session.
And there are others. It's just that we don't use the other ones.
Exactly.
Yeah.
But
we
it,
have
it,
used
it, it is in
those
our,
two, but
it is in our
but in
state law.
In reference to directors, we are an elected official.
Correct.
That's different than an employee. We are not an employee. We are elected officials. So we can't have an executive session to discuss our differences as board members.
If you're going to have an investigation or any such of that, or any talking of that, it should be in an executive session.
No.
If we're talking... let's see. I read it here.
We've actually had some legal advice about this. And the only
B, to consider the dismissal or disciplining of or to hear complaints or charges brought against a public officer, employee, staff member, or individual agent who does not represent an open hearing.
But that's not what we're doing now. We're looking at a policy. We're not looking at a person that did something.
Isn't this under harassments?
We're just looking at the developing a new policy.
Well, then it would probably be the next one that you're going to probably talk about then that I'm referring to.
Which specific part of which resolution are you talking about, Cameron?
Well, I'm not sure because you guys, I don't think I have the resolution.
We have a harassment and other inappropriate behavior policy, and we have an investigative policy for a complaint against a employee or member of the board.
Well, that's what I'm referring to then.
The complaint?
Yeah, if you're going to do it, it should also, anything that you talk about should go into an executive session, not a public meeting.
That's not the way I understood it, but I will research that some more, and we'll ask for a legal opinion, if that's all right with the rest of the board.
Sure, my understanding is that some of those exemptions that are listed under ORS for executive sessions are when you can go into executive session, not when you must go into executive session. And what we're talking about here is some sort of a harassment investigation if a member of the board potentially does something. And I don't think there's anything that would require, that mandates it be an executive session. And my opinion would be, in order to have maximum transparency as elected officials, that as much of it be done in public as possible.
Especially since we're elected
we're
officials.
We're elected, yeah. We're accountable to the people. So the people ought to be able to know what we're going through.
But I think it's prudent to investigate that further.
Sure.
We already had some legal advice about when we put these together, but we're definitely going to look at it one more time. So which one are you most concerned about, the investigative policy about a complaint or the harassment policy?
Well, it's probably the investigation of all that.
Okay. And that's under...
We wouldn't be talking about an employee. And I mean, it's under the saying, you're in your resolution, you're saying employee, board director, manager, and all.
The only other thing that I think that we should probably consider is a vendor.
Yeah. That was another thing I had on there.
Contractors?
Contractors.
Is that what you're thinking?
Yeah, vendor, contractor, anything like that. Okay, we will follow up on that. Thank you for the suggestion. And that's under, let's see, that would be Resolution 2402. Under 2403, harassment and other inappropriate behavior policy, were there any comments about it?
I don't have that.
It's 2402. Well, but
it was mislabeled.
Well, this points out one of the reasons why our past practice has been not to assign a number to the resolution until we're prepared to vote on it. And so in draft form, I think it gets really confusing when we try to assign a 02 and 03 and 01 number to these things prior to, I mean, there's conceivably some other resolution that will come up before these are finished being drafted, and 2402 will be something completely unrelated to this. So I would suggest going forward that with draft resolutions for consideration that we say something like 24XX or something, or YY or ZZ, something that doesn't put a number on it, because that number is part of the legal document.
Well, and that's good advice for me, too. I need to incorporate that when I write a resolution
and
as well.
So we could start with AABB and just work our way through the alphabet on draft resolutions, not that we do that many of them.
Okay. Sean, did you have any other comments?
Nope.
Okay. So is it Director Price?
I do. Do you? I mean, I've got several comments. You've answered some of my questions that there has been some level of legal consultation, and that your intent is to take the drafts to the HR consultant.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. So that answered one of my questions. And just a bit further on that, I appreciate that, because these things are common concerns across all kinds of organizations, and I think we don't want to reinvent the wheel trying to write our own. But we've got a draft, and as my personal opinion is, because resolutions are statements of policy and practice that could be cited in a legal matter down the road, that precision in language is extremely important. And I think the final review and editing of these drafts needs to be done by our legal advisors immediately prior to it being considered. I have several comments and suggestions on specific language, and I found myself wanting a Word version of it so I could do track changes and make suggestions and ask questions. You know, what do you mean by this? Is this should be that, shouldn't it? And I've got a whole long list of them. That's because they're, for example, item 2 on the first one on the investigative policy. Item 2, I think it's the end of the phrase, an internal matter to be handled by the authority. I think the intention there is to be handled by the authority manager. That's just one example of the kinds of things that popped out at me when I was reading these things.
I do have these in a Word format.
Could I get them in a Word format and I could go through and...
You too, Sean?
Oh, I'm fine, but I think it's a great suggestion. Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, I mean, we've been working on it for a while, so...
You're pretty familiar with it, mm-hmm. and I'm not. This was the first time I've seen it. And so things popped out at me that you've grown accustomed to.
Yeah, I've got no problem with that.
I won't bore everybody with all that. One of the things that pops into my head reading the draft on harassment is, and the legal advisors will clarify this in the end, but if there are legal definitions of terms like offensive, intimidating, inappropriate, because those are personal judgment issues. And I wonder if those are distinguished from, and I don't have it in front of me, from the some of the other terms in
some of the state terminology. Because there was a difference I noticed between what we have and what the state has had.
Well, and I don't know in the minds of lawyers if a term like offensive is legally valid because what's offensive to me might not be offensive to you.
It's in the eye of the beholder, I guess.
And so I don't know the answer to that question, but it's a question that I had. And I can put that in the notes. Let's see, the other...
Well, this is exactly what we wanted to find out, because, mm-hmm. you know, we can't... Mm-hmm. We're three separate minds, but we all look at things different, so bringing all this up.
Now, Tom, I've got a question. The stuff that we have, I think, that is in the resolution versus what is in the employee handbook. So the resolution will cover what is in the handbook also of what we write up?
Well, it's policy, so yeah.
So do you have to have the same terminology in the resolution as you would for the employee handbook?
Not necessarily.
No, and you guys might have saw how I kind of drifted off and thought on this, and you know, I'll explain a little bit about, you know, why I said those things, if you can even interpret what I was trying to say there. You know, I think what we've got a couple of policies here that we're working on that we really need, and I think Tom's done a great job pulling them in, but I will say, I don't know how it can be avoided, but I'm a little concerned with policy for employees and policy for board members sharing the same document. And for example, to my knowledge, we don't have a single resolution to date where we describe employee policy. And that makes me wonder if a resolution is really the best mechanism for this. Even my feeling is even if we're trying to capture a larger group, that it seems as though we should have a complaint investigation procedure in the employee handbook, more directed at employees, and for complaints against board members and those investigations, those would be better off in resolution, and we've set a precedent for that with some of the prior resolutions we've written. So when I was saying things were getting murky to me, I'm, you know, structurally is what I'm talking about. Not the content, but structurally. I just wonder if we've really thought through whether a resolution is the best method for these policies. And I guess I'll just leave it at that, because we don't talk about employee policy that involves employees anywhere else but the employee handbook. I've never seen it in resolution form.
Well, I take that very seriously, and I think you've got an excellent point. And somewhere in here, I think it was in the harassment policy, the employee handbook was referred to as a general guide. And I think the employee handbook is actually quite a bit more legally than a general guide. I think it is
a policy.
It's an employment contract with the employee. That's where employees can go to see what are the rules of the road. Mm-hmm. So anything affecting employees, including investigations, including harassment, I believe should be in the employee handbook. Now, board members are not employees, and so having resolutions governing any issues affecting or involving the board, I think it might be appropriate to have a resolution or to modify some of the resolutions we passed before on board activity. But separate resolutions regarding the board, I think, might make sense. But I think anything that affects or directly involves an employee, I think, needs to be in the employee handbook.
And I started thinking the same thing rather recently, Tom. It stood out in my mind as something that is, well, it's, I like I say, it's unprecedented to make employee policy via resolution, at least from what I've seen with us. And where this really kind of stands out in a glaring way is within the same policy, we talk about inappropriate behavior and investigation policies and consequences for employees, but of course we don't talk about consequences for board members. And when you combine that into a single policy, that becomes even more glaring to me.
And the employee issues need to all be in one place. You can't say to the employees, okay, so there's an employee handbook, and then there's this and that that also affect you. That's the purpose of the handbook, and all of that stuff is in the handbook. So you've got one place to go for employees.
Well, there also needs to be the definitions of each one, how they break them down as far as what a definition is. Because you just can't say workplace harassment. Well, I mean, there's several that are there, not just...
Well, when it comes to the employee handbook, I may agree with you, but as far as setting overall policy, I disagree with you a little bit. To John's point, I disagree with you a little bit because policy is our purview. As an authority manager, you follow the policy avenue that we present you. So as near as I could tell, the only tool we have to set policy is a resolution.
Well, when we revise the employee handbook, that revision becomes the policy. And it's John's responsibility as manager to carry that out. So it's not the form of a resolution.
But it's our job to create policy, not John's.
Right. And so when we revise the employee handbook, we do that by board action.
Correct.
And that, so the board is taking that step that revises that handbook that makes it, this is the new employee policy. It's not a resolution.
I think the policy should be done in a resolution because that's really our only tool that we have as board members to create a policy.
Not really, though, if we, and see, the lawyers can sort this out for us, but I believe that if we as a board approve changes to the employee handbook, we are effectively changing our policies. And it does not need to be in the form of a resolution.
I'd like that clarification.
What we did back in January of 2020 was we amended the employee handbook.
Right.
And we didn't do that with a resolution.
No.
We did it by just amending, but it was
right.
A board action.
It was
and
a
we
board
amended
action.
The handbook. One of the problems, though, is that we in that amendment, we say that we will, if there are any accusations or complaints, we'll investigate it, but then we didn't set out how we would investigate it.
And we should have gone ahead and done that in the employee handbook.
And so I think that's part of what we're doing here.
Yeah.
And that was one of the things that I think we all wanted to address.
Right.
You know, that Tom and I worked on and John worked on is that we don't have an avenue for doing those investigations. And so maybe what we need to do is separate it out where part of it is an amendment, an upgraded amendment to the employee handbook,
yeah,
where we have a policy for investigations.
Right.
And then we could have a separate resolution that would be, you know, investigations of non-employees.
Non-employees.
And maybe that's what we need to do. Maybe we need to make that separation.
I think that's the way to go, Sean.
And I think really that was, you know, our starting point was here's where, A, we don't have a policy for investigating employees, and B, we don't have anything that covers board members. And so our goal was to try to make that better, and maybe what we need to do is just separate the process.
And I think the language and the thinking and everything is right on. I just don't, the mechanism for delivering it, I think, is the employee handbook for employees and resolutions for board members.
I look forward to your comments when I get that Word doc, those Word docs.
That makes sense.
Well, in the new policy that was
okay, somebody sent them to me. I don't know who.
I have.
You have on K, on workplace guidelines, it comes out complete resolution policy.
So do you want comments sent to you?
And are we going to have, are we going to have a resolution for employee handbook?
Yes. I could take yours.
I think that's what we just talked about.
Right.
The mechanism for changing the employee handbook is just an amendment to the handbook, but then the mechanism for investigating complaints that are not regarding employees or from employees needs to be done by resolution. At least that's what I'm taking from this conversation.
So we need to go in there and take it out of the employee handbook on K and change it somehow instead of complaint resolution policy to complaint policy or how to or something, because it has it in here as a resolution.
Well, I think we obviously need a little more work. And we also need some advice from legal counsel. And
do you want to send Kathy a copy, a set of the Word documents to
Yeah.
you? And then
no problem.
We can each make comments in our own wording.
Sure.
Yeah.
So let's table this.
I'd like a hard copy so I can go through it.
Sure.
And get it myself.
Let's table this until another meeting.
That sounds good to me.
This is great progress.
I have one more question, though, for the board, just kind of philosophically in the same token. So we've talked about amending the handbook, which is kind of an easy thing to do because all we do is go in and change the original document and call it an amendment. What does it mean to amend a resolution? Because in my mind, if you amend a resolution, you create a new resolution just to say how you're changing the original resolution, but the original resolution doesn't go away.
Well, or usually we supersede the original resolution.
Okay.
With the amended one.
Well, because I prefer, if I'm going to amend a resolution, I'll just tell you I prefer it, and I'd like to get your feedback because it's a board decision. If I'm going to change an existing resolution, I'd like to do my changes and pull everything in there from the original resolution
sure.
plus my changes,
yeah.
and then I rescind the old document.
That's what we should do.
Because if we amend a resolution, and if we do it three or four times, I'm concerned we
right.
may have four or five related policy documents
sure.
that people may
exactly.
not be able to keep track of.
That's exactly why you do a new resolution. And rescind the old one.
So basically, okay. We really developed that we need to have a resolution or policy for employees, board members, and I don't know where you throw contractors and managers. There has to be a separation of each or guidelines or policies.
Well, in the case of the authority manager is an exempt employee. Directors are elected officials. So John falls under a supervisory employee, just like Leonard does. He's a supervisory employee. We are elected officials, whole other animal.
But we can't lump it all in as one because it's totally, they've got different parts about it.
That's
it can't be all
yeah, I think
that's I think that's what we were just saying. Yeah.
I think you're right. All right. So we need some more work here on this. And I'm glad we got everybody's.
You've done a tremendous amount of work, and it really has made progress to get to this point and get the issues on paper and start a process.
Well, let's put it on next month.
I really appreciate that.
Put it on next month's agenda and continue working on it.
Yeah.
Okay.
Thanks for your work, Tom.
Yeah.
Yep. You too, pal.
Appreciate it.
Okay, so the next item under new business is item C, Oregon State University, Portland State University microplastic study. John, what's up with that?
Well, I was contacted by these institutions. They're working on a joint study to evaluate the occurrence of microplastics, not only the occurrence but also the efficacy of some potential remediation measures. I'm sure that most of you have probably heard about microplastics in the news, and you know it's probably the biggest environmental concern there is right now. And they're wanting to do an evaluation of watersheds and coastal communities. And they've asked us to participate in this study. It is a two-pronged approach, one to evaluate the occurrence and impact of microplastics in stormwater, the other in wastewater effluents. And when it comes to the stormwater, I told them, there really isn't much we can help you with. We can't really partner with you on that because we don't really manage stormwater. We don't have catch basins per se. There are catch basins in town, but they're nothing that we oversee or manage. So I suggested that if they felt like they need to partner with somebody on that, either Tillamook County or perhaps Nestucca Ridge Development would be a good choice. Because I do think in some of those newer developments in town, that's where you start to see some of the catch basins. You don't really see them in the older parts of town. The other portion of the study is to sample our wastewater effluent, not to, you know, find anything wrong with our treatment process, because our treatment process is not designed to remove this stuff. And that's one of the problems. There really aren't any methods to remove this, unless it's microfiltration, which luckily that's what we have at Horn Creek. And even then, these particles can be very small. They would like to solicit the assistance of some of our customers eventually as part of this study to install some filtration devices on their washing machines at no cost to our customers. They'd like to target 15% of our population for that purpose. And what they're trying to do is to determine how efficient filters like this are in reducing these microplastics, because these microplastics come from washing machine discharges more than anything else. Huh. And it's because of all the clothes we wear.
Non-cotton.
Have a lot of what they define as microplastics in there.
Fleece and all that.
So yeah. When your clothes, you know, get washed, that releases these into the wastewater system and eventually into our environment. And so the good news is they'll do all the community outreach. We don't have to do any of that.
That's nice.
And, you know, that will involve the help of some of our customers. I think they could probably easily find 15% of the people that are concerned about this and would like to assist. But really, for us, it's really not going to take any more time, effort, or money on our part than just collecting some periodic samples for them. And they take the samples, they do the analysis, and that's really all they need from us. You know, a lot of what we do is environmental in nature. And this is probably the biggest environmental challenge of our times. And I believe that it's something that Pacific City the authority should participate in. And I'm not sure this really takes an act of the board to approve or not, but it's something I wanted to bring to the board, and I'd like the board's buy-in, if nothing else, on this. I think this is something worthwhile for us to participate in.
So I think it's a really important thing to be doing. I just would want to make sure that it doesn't have a big impact on the staff and their job responsibilities.
Absolutely.
And if it doesn't, then I think we should cooperate to the best that we can and help them.
Yeah. Well, John, what other studies have they done as far as on some of this stuff?
Well, I'm not an expert in that. I know that right now they're focusing on coastal watersheds, and I know that other kind of municipalities, we're not a municipality, but Cannon Beach is participating. They've asked us to participate. I believe that, I want to say maybe Neskowin? There's a half a dozen of them, and they felt like Pacific City would be a good choice. Now, I'm sure there are people studying this right now all over the world. Mm-hmm. But, you know, this is Oregon State University and Portland State University. This is a joint effort. I sent a summary of the study. I put it in the board packet. And I think we've got the right people looking at the right contaminants, and I'm very confident that this effort is worthwhile, and although it may be relatively small in scope, just coastal watersheds, I'm anticipate they're doing this all over the country and perhaps even all over the world at this point.
So, I mean, like you're saying, washing machines, so then the laundry mats, they would probably ask them. We wouldn't mandate anything like that.
Well, we wouldn't mandate anything. I think the idea is that, you know, eventually this will lead to regulation of some kind, whether they develop treatment techniques so that people like us can help remove it from the water, or whether they require washing machines to only come with these internal filtration systems.
Yeah.
And so, you know, what comes of this is yet to be seen, but what I know will come of these studies, because it always does, is regulation designed to mitigate the impact of this.
So how much that would that on our discharge line into the river? Would there be some type of, I know they do river testing and stuff in certain, you know, certain areas of the river.
Well, the primary place they want to sample is our wastewater effluent. So they can do that. They don't have to do that in the river. They can do that right at the treatment plant. Yeah.
Oh, well, you have my buy-in. Even if it
means, me too.
Even if
I'm
it
all for it.
Dedicating
a
little
idea.
Bit of staff time to it, I'd be all for it.
I appreciate that.
I agree.
Yeah. Staff time's supposed to be a minimum, but, you know.
Well, and you'll be there to monitor that.
I'll be there to monitor that. They've been very upfront with me in regard of our commitment. And it seems pretty minimal, really. So
good.
All right. Well, thank you, everyone.
All right. This next section is guest questions and comments. We have a couple of guests from our earthworks here. And I would like to caution all members of the board and staff not to make any comments concerning any guest comments. So we're just here to hear what you have to say, gentlemen.
And that's the only reason we're here, just to hear what you have to say. So
oh.
It sounds like we're kind of in a mute position here.
Well, we didn't have anything.
Well,
thank
answer
you.
Any questions that you might have, of course.
There
seems to be a lot of different comments going around town, so.
We can't, at this point, we can't make any comments.
Well, this item is not on the
agenda. It's not on the agenda. So
you can't discuss anything that's not on the agenda.
So if you have anything that you want us to know, well,
we're all ears.
We're ears, yeah.
Well, I never came here with, you know, with that thought in mind. So, of course, I never haven't gone over it. You know, off the top of my head, I guess the only thing we could do is you know, let you know that we've done some paving today, and we probably got, you know, maybe two more days worth if we get the weather that, you know, makes it to where we can pave. So that's where we're at this point.
That's good to hear.
Good.
Yeah, very good to hear. I drove by. Yes, it looked like you guys were busy down there. Saw the metal plates in the road and stuff.
Well, so, with the, you know, the temperatures this time of year, you've got a pretty limited window that you can do stuff in. And,
absolutely.
This was an unusually warm day, so they were able to knock quite a little bit out.
Good.
Looks better than what it did when we started working there.
Yeah, well, that's all good. Yeah, it's good to see some opportunities to kind of keep things moving for sure. Yeah, we didn't have anything about it on the agenda, so you know, we're glad to have you. You're welcome anytime. You know, there might be on the agenda at some point in time, but you know, we're kind of just in a wait and see mode, and you know, once you guys feel like you're at total completion, I know you'll let me know. We'll get a hold of the county, see if they agree, and you know, look forward to getting this project finished up.
The county's always notified before we do actual work on the road, because it is a county road.
Yep.
So they know where we're at all the time.
Good. Right.
Okay. Next item is chair director comments. I only have a couple of things here. This last weekend, I attended the Small District Association of Oregon conference in Seaside. For our guests, Small District Association of Oregon includes all small districts, school districts, water districts, special districts, recreational districts, I mean, just all kinds of things. So we're interested in water and sewer. And the one item that I attended that I was most interested in was we have a current legislative session in session right now. So I was interested in what bills come up that may affect us. And I only have the three here. I'll just give you a brief overview. The legislative website, I will say, under Oregon.gov, you can go to the legislature, does a pretty good job of laying these things out. There's also, they have cameras in these committee rooms so you can listen in. And they're very informative, and it's about one of the best things the state does is keep, it's very complicated. There's a couple thousand bills. Normal legislative session has up to 4,000 to 5,000 sometimes, and that gets a little hectic. These are just state bills. The number one federal thing that I'm just going to just point out is the copper lead thing that the EPA is asking all authorities and water treatment plants make sure there's no lead or copper pipes going from the meter into the house. And even though all of the folks here in Oregon, the authority in this case and in all water companies, they don't own that. That is owned by the property owner. It appears that the EPA has overstepped its authority here because access is unlawful for us to do that. And that, at this point, is being litigated, I guess. Okay, as far as Oregon bills that we're interested in is House Bill 4046, is Housing RC, they call it. This act allows rural residents to build an extra house for their families, allows an occupying homeowner outside of an urban growth boundary to site one additional family dwelling unit in the tract of the home. It takes effect on the 91st day following adjournment, sine die.
Has that passed?
No.
Okay. These are all Under consideration.
Under consideration.
Okay, thanks.
That would happen.
Do you have any idea how, if, is that any different from the, from what's already been passed regarding ADU and that kind of stuff? Different?
It is different. It
makes it bigger, basically?
Is that see, where is that? It says an extra house. It is identified as a house, not an ADU. So, for example, farmland, you have 80 acres, you have only have one house on it, you can build another house.
So, for, as far as us, that would be another connection or an add-in?
It would be another connection. Bill, House Bill 4099, housing SDCs, which are system development charges. The Act makes OHCS guarantee a local government's collection of a fee to be paid by a home builder on a delayed schedule. The Act goes into effect when the governor signs it. The Housing and Community Service Department to guarantee local government's deferral of system development charges for housing developments becomes operative on January 1st, 2025, establishes the Municipal Development Protection Fund for such purposes. This particular...
That's House Bill 4099.
Correct. This particular bill, I believe, is sponsored by Senator Anderson, our local state senator, and the SDAO is against it. Mm-hmm. Because it's just deferring those SDCs that would come to us. In my opinion, a matter of fact, I even talked to Senator Anderson about this. If the state, if they really want to get workforce housing and more housing, state come up with a fund to pay those for the local utilities, some kind of a fund to actually, because ours, for example, are pretty expensive, and many other communities their SDCs are very expensive also. That's probably the biggest gripe that builders have about, especially developers. So we're not for that one. And the last item I had, this one might definitely affect us. It's called the County Right-of-Way Fee.
Which
allows a county to charge a permit fee to build, move, or change a line, fixture, or facility that is in the right-of-way of a county public road. Okay, this is Senate Bill 1566. Okay. There are exceptions. It sunsets on January 1st, 2031. It authorizes a county governing body to charge a fee for the administration and issuance of a permit to construct, alter, relocate, maintain, or repair a water, gas, electric, or communication service line, fixture, or facility within the right-of-way of a public road under the jurisdiction of the county, subject to specific exceptions, sunsets in January of 2031. Those are the only...
But what was the very first one before 4099?
4046.
Thank you. Because these are easy to look up.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. And those are the three main ones that I thought would, or four, that would affect us. So I thought I wanted to point it
Thank
out
you.
To the group.
Tom, did anyone have any discussion about the recreational immunity? Did that
no.
come up at all?
That did not come up in the session I attended. It was mostly for water or sewer issues.
I think, though, there is a real strong commitment on behalf of a lot of people in Salem to get that fixed
get that
in
through.
This short session because it's affecting everybody.
Does any other director have any comments? Director Strotska.
So maybe I should have brought this up when we had the minutes of the last meeting. So we had 11 people here last time, and in the minutes it's 11 customers at the meeting, see audio for names. Is it possible that we have people sign in, especially if we have large groups of people? We know who these two gentlemen are. We don't need to have them sign in, perhaps. But if we have people that we don't know, and to make sure that we have their names spelled correctly and that we have them correctly in the record.
We did that in the past when we met in the regular, our facility on over there. But I think that's a good idea. We ought to. This one kind of, we didn't know until the last minute that there was going to be a large group. So.
Well, it should just be a routine part.
It will. And what I'll do is I'll bring an attendance roster and leave it kind of at the door for all of our meetings, not just our special meetings.
Cool. I have kind of the similar thing because I missed the meeting, and reading the minutes, it doesn't give me any information. There was on the financial, Director Carlton asked one question. Mr. Wesley answered the question. It's like, well, what was the question? I have no idea, and I didn't get an answer. Chair Donahue asked a question. Mr. Wesley answered the question. I have no idea.
On minutes, I'd like to point out that it does not have to be verbatim.
I understand that. But
and we have the recorded version of it available on the website. And so anybody that wants that level of detail can go listen to the meeting.
We had talked about these, if we're trying to be transparent, you know, for somebody to read this, this is not transparent. And
legally,
I suggested that whoever does the minutes to send them to SDO class to find out what is required. Because there is stuff that is required, and it's not on.
I've read it myself, the opinion by the Attorney General. I brought it up to this body here about a year ago. It's a general overview of what happened at the meeting. They absolutely have to have each person named there. In this case, they were supposed to have everyone's name that did attend. That was from the Attorney General, so we are in error there. So it's probably a good idea that we have a sign-up sheet from now on.
We will, and I think one reason the person deferred to the audio because she didn't know what else to do, she listened to the audio, and she had trouble making out the people's names.
Yes. Yeah.
So I think that we will put an attendance roster and have all guests sign it, except, of course, for the guests that attend online.
And we'll note those.
But we have record of those. And, yes, we will do that for sure. And because I do agree that is important information, and when it's lacking, it's one of those pieces that are supposed to be you're supposed to have it, you know, documented.
To your point, Cameron, like I said, it has to be a general overview of it. Does it not have to be precise?
I get that, but this was very vague. So,
yeah.
I mean, it just for our itself, for us, it was, I think one time it was that our minutes weren't very good and that we had to boost them up. Well, they were really good. Rochelle was doing a fantastic job. You know, I could go back and refresh my mind what was talked about in the meeting and then, okay, understand that. But I've gone back and I'm having a hard time.
Well, we've answered that problem with the MP3 player, which we've had for years. And we can listen to the recording and you can hear every word that was said. And that addresses that concern.
I have a hard time. I've got bad ears and stuff, and that doesn't really help me. So, but it is what it is.
Okay. Last item. There are no other director comments. This meeting stands adjourned at 6:25 p.m.
Thanks, everybody.
Thank you, everybody.
Nice to see you guys.
I didn't know if you wanted to be